We have a strict no grammar policy here on the Shop Doc Show. So, yeah, you're in good hands. Shopomaniacs, you're listening to another episode of the Shop Talk Show. I'm Dave, Keyframes Rupert, and with me is Chris.
Transition.
Ease in. What an ease in transition we just did, Chris.
You're right. Well, we have really just eased into the morning here, haven't we? Feeling good.
Yep.
Just another Thursday. I don't know what day you all listen to this, but
before I bounce out of here. Ooh.
Yeah.
Hey, what's happening today, Chris?
I can't follow that up. That's just too good. We're going to end up talking a bunch about animation today, but you know, don't let that fool you. We might bounce around to other topics because we have a multi-talented, interesting guest to talk to today. Second time on the show, I believe, Rachel Neighbors. Hey, Rachel.
Howdy. You can just call me Rachel Will Change Neighbors.
Oh,
solid. Ooh. Really good. Really good. Do we still use Will Change? I thought that was out. It was too.
I had to use it yesterday.
Some hipsters are trying to make it a thing. The community in general is still like, what?
Yeah. I had to use it yesterday. I turned on paint flashing render triangles and deep inside the Chrome internals. And my whole page was turning green, and I was like, I can make that better. So
you just
what
will
it says to me
it.
Is, I want some goddamn performance, please. That's what that property says.
Performance on.
Yes.
Anyway, okay. We should.
Well, we got Rachel here because obviously you've spent years and years, maybe a lifetime, talking about animation, but most recently have a book called Animation at Work. Rachel, tell us about the book.
Oh, thank you so much for the shout out, Animation at Work. It's a little concise ebook out from A Book Apart. You can get it for the low price of $8 American. And
nice.
I brought like a coupon code to get even more off. If you use Shop Talk over at bookapart.com, you could get 20% off that book. Use all caps, Shop Talk.
What? Whoa. This is buy it now territory.
It sure is.
That's a really good deal. I feel like you should almost, like, for super fans, have a discount code that makes it $10.
Oh.
I don't know.
Oh. So I actually sell it in person. Like, I have these little cards with redemption stickers I stick on them, and I will, like, nice. You know, if you would like to buy one, I can run your credit card. Most of the times, people just hand me a tenner and are like, oh, it's good. Here, put it into the money for the Web Animation Weekly Fund.
Nice.
So that actually sort of does happen. But yeah, this book is sort of the culmination of the 5 years that I've spent working in the space of animation on the web. It's not so much about the implementation, the technical implementation of CSS animations and transitions, so much as it's about the why and the where you use animation and all the arguments you need to make that. It's got all the information you need to make that argument to the people you work with and answers all the questions that I've gotten from folks throughout my gosh.
You know, the one that always sticks with me is the one where it's like, I didn't invent this. I don't know where I first heard it, but I hear it once in a while and I'm always like, yeah, that's the one that sticks with me.
Yeah.
It's the one where it's just movement period, like makes our like animal brain or whatever notice it more. So if you're like manipulating a list, of course, if you slide a hole open in the list and slide something in there, it just makes some intuitive sense because of just how our brains are wired up. Is that the kind of thing that
yeah, exactly.
Think about too?
Well, I mean, the human visual system is an amazing thing. And in writing this book, I did a lot of research about the actual science of how the human brain is put together and how we basically, our brains break down visual processing into motion and form and color, two separate things. And the form and color portion actually evolved separately. Most mammals have a really strong motion perception system. But for animals like birds, primates that see in color, there's an additional form and color section of the brain that processes things. It has this other layer. And it's one of the reasons that humans can look at something like a comic book, which is just a bunch of lines scribbled on a piece of paper, and they can infer shape and form. Is partly because of this interesting duality in our brains. It's really fascinating.
I suppose you look at somebody who's drawn to be, I don't know, a big round, the penguin or whatever, and you see a 2D drawing of that, you can imagine that it's a big round supervillain. You don't need, it doesn't need to spin around on the page for me to know that.
So animation's one of those interesting things. Like, we all instinctively know that it works, but we can't actually put our fingers on why or how it works. And there are some interesting studies and research into the human visual system that explains a lot of this. I think I spent like the first chapter going in on that.
That's nice. So research is nice to have, because and to balance with just intuition, right? Because some, you can probably get somewhere in your animation abilities and work without reading a scientific paper about why animation works, right? Because there's some level of intuition where you're like, yeah, that looks nice. That's about
it's what true. And definitely, like, getting people to buy off on doing something with animation, having that visual, like, let me just show you what it looks like, can really get someone sold on it. They it clicks with them. But when you're actually trying to explain why one technique would be better than another, or why it matters in this particular case, it helps to have those that theory and that science to back it up and be able to come in and be like, well, we got to show the causality between this action over here and this action over here. So there's plenty of research papers that show that if we use this motion, we'll be able to indicate that more stronger for our users. More stronger. Oh my God. It should just be stronger. Ugh, grammar nerd in me.
The book was edited though, I'm sure, by the lovely people.
I wish I had a real life.
We have a strict no grammar policy here on the show.
Oh, I'm in luck.
Yeah. You're in good hands. I like that, that motion, is complementary to form and color. I feel like when I first got into the web, color psychology was kind of a big deal. It was like, oh, if you make your header blue, you seem trustworthy, or I read whole books on like the color, how colors can change your whole website. And then obviously design is so much about the form, does this structure make sense? And then now kind of having that layer of motion too. I mean, that is, if our brains are wired for that, our digital products should have that. And that's actually, kind of the difference, at least in my mind, between like static, posters or whatever, or flyers or other material like that, and the web is the web or apps or whatever, we can start adding in kind of motion. We can bring that in. It's not a static medium. It's a very kind of, programmatic.
Just because we can, medium. We should.
Just because we can, we should, darn it. Yeah. Well,
that's actually how I got started on this whole this animation tear. I was really into CSS, and I wanted to go to CSS Dev Conf, the very first one that they had in Hawaii, and Chris Coyer was going to be there. And I was like, oh my God, I got to meet this person. He's so cool. Oh, senpai, please notice me. And I used to be a cartoonist back in my former career, and I was in this place where I was sort of the gatekeeper of all the CSS back in the early days of SAS. And it was cool, but I was like, can I combine these two things and do something really neat? Oh, here's the CSS animation specification. I bet I could do something cool with my art and this. And I ended up actually getting my talk accepted. I went out, I got to meet Chris. And then I was like, I'm in love with CSS animations. I'm quitting my job. Peace out. Bye. And the rest is history.
That's fantastic. That's happening to people out there now. Certainly, there's people who have some art that they're trying to, I don't know, or they hear about some technology that might be able to fuel their art, and they're doing it.
Absolutely. And this is
we're having awesome. A conference at CodePen coming up soon called the CodePen World's Fair. This is just a little plug for that. But there's there's some element of that we're hoping that there's artists there who are kind of using technology and art and smashing them together.
Why, Chris, is this online or is this in person?
It's in Chicago this summer, May 30th, 31st, and the 1st. So that's coming up, though. The URL is codepenworldsfair.com, and it features some animation. So maybe it's worth checking out a little bit. In fact, just this morning we put up, it's so heavily animated that we're like, you know what? We should probably have some kind of option there for people who choose to not be eyeball blasted with this level of animation. We did it on purpose because it's just like, wow, the world's fair. Ah, animations go crazy. So you'll see that you're asked up front whether you want to see these animations or not.
That is so kind.
And there's three different versions of the site. If you're into responsive design and playing with it, it was lovingly crafted that way. It's really pretty fun. So that leads me, though, to this. This is kind of a classic in animation, though. Maybe if you're looking at the site at the moment, this type of just like unstoppable blink and flash intense animation is often like frowned upon, especially if there's no way to turn it off. For accessibility reasons, right? There's people that just prefer not to see this at all.
Right. So accessibility in animation is interesting. This is like the last chapter in my book. I try to give people some good practical advice on, you know, these are some emerging best practices. But this touches on an area of neurodiversity that is really hard to peg down. You might ask, well, what's accessible by default with animation? And the truth is, there's no accessible by default. There's an animated version of an interaction can be way more useful and less accessible for people who are good at processing animations. But for people who are, for instance, maybe they have vestibular disorders, which is where the vestibular system, by the way, is the thing that makes you feel dizzy, or it's your sense of balance, essentially. And folks, all of us are wired differently. Some folks, you know, motion on a screen, it triggers them. Their body looks at that motion and is like, the world is moving. Okay, wow, but I feel stationary. I'm going to make you feel sick now. And to various degrees, ranging anywhere from a headache to like really feeling car sick. And for those people, less animation is better. There are kinds of animations that will be less triggering, like fades, but those animations tend to carry less information and thus be less useful in building interactions for people, because the idea is that animations add information back into the system. They give you context. They show causality. Fade doesn't do a hell of a lot of that. It's a slightly more polite version of a jump cut or just popping something onto the screen. So how do you accommodate all these different kinds of people without selling one side or the other of the spectrum short, right? We want to give them better experiences, but at the same time, we don't want to make horrible experiences for some people. So what do? We give people choices. Right now, I think that's the best option. Do you mind if I monologue just a little bit?
No, let's hear it. This is
I'm gonna get some popcorn and settle in here.
All right. So how it works is so Apple, back in the day of iOS 7, they introduced this wonderful little zooming animation on your phone. So when you tap on an icon, you zoom right into the icon, right? And it's like, ah, you're in that app now. I love this because I kept forgetting where the heck all my apps were. It was like, is the Safari on this screen or that screen? I don't remember. Now suddenly I could remember it. But it actually made so many of their users like have that vestibular reaction of dizziness, that they had to hot patch a reduced motion accessibility switch that would convert those zooms over to fades. So, you know, you tap an icon and now instead of zooming in, the whole app just fades onto the screen. A little less context for people who like context like myself and benefit from it. I'm not going to turn that switch on. But one of the problems is, I'll get to the problem. The wonderful people over at WebKit/iOS Safari introduced this media query called prefers reduced motion, which can be set to on or off. You think, oh my gosh, this is great. I can put all my CSS animations under this media query. I can use JavaScript detection to like load GreenSock and all of my JavaScript animations conditionally based on this user preference. But there are a couple of problems. You know, one, it's only supported in iOS Safari. I think maybe desktop Safari too. Hopefully other browsers will pick it up. But also, there are a couple of problems like this whole reduced motion thing. It doesn't really accommodate other kinds of animation. For instance, people with dyslexia and on the autism spectrum, there's some evidence for spinning and repeating looping animations being kind of an issue for them. There's no reduced spinning loader GIFs media query out there. It's not really a motion. It's a particular kind of animation. So, oh, and let's not even get into how rapid flashes can trigger people who have epilepsy problems. So sure,
it's not nuanced enough.
It's a little ham-fisted. It was created for this one particular use case, but it does not cover the myriad of use cases that face the human visual spectrum.
So prefers reduced motion kind of, I guess it's an alias for zoom is sort of what, like zooming effects. Don't do me zooming effects.
Well, also like moving things from side to side or parallax or, you know, pretty much anything where
it's
pixels
so new that there's
going to
be
there.
Some paving of the cow paths, I imagine. Because like now that it exists, people will use it for however they use it. And if a ton of people use it one way, that just is what it becomes to mean.
Yeah. It just, I think it's a bit too focused for what I'm a stickler for terminology, but motion itself does not capture all the ways in which animation can be used and abused. That said, Windows computers ship with Windows 10 ship with a reduce animation option. So I'm really excited by the idea that one day, you know, maybe this media query can apply to both systems and be respected throughout all websites, and we'll be able to rely on it in whatever form it takes. Until then, we can always detect for it, and if it's not present, like you can't tell if the user has a preference, we can offer people like a little bar or something to turn animation on or off like we do with cookie warnings. So there's options. We got options we can work with here. We can offer people options.
It makes me think of a browser extension, perhaps, just because at CodePen, we have this like chunk of code that's responsible for forcing things like animations off, because we have this notion that as you're browsing throughout CodePen and paging through things, you'll get it's an iframe, so you'll see however the person originally intended for that little motion to work, but only for about 5 seconds, and then we nuke all the animations, and there's a bunch of code that's like intended to find and kill animations, essentially, of any kind, and like, oh, well, how do you do that? There's keyframes, there's transitions, there's request animation frame, there's set interval, there's a million ways you could do it, and this code is intended to like find and destroy all of them. The idea being, it saves your CPU a little bit. You can't, if you're viewing 6 animations at once, it might be overwhelming.
And your GPU. So,
wouldn't that be cool if we could reuse that kind of thing as a browser extension? Like,
yeah, I think there are some people.
I don't want to see animations on any of your sites.
Yeah, that's actually, it's interesting. You should mention that. I remember there is some concern among browser vendors about fiddling too much with turning animations on or off at a global scale, because so many sites rely on callbacks from animations now. It's changing.
Well, I could see that, right? You have like an on animation end, and that calls back, okay, now it's okay to change the page to the next section of content.
Uh-huh.
So if the animation was dead, there's no way to get to that content. That's fascinating.
Body fade in. That just wouldn't happen.
Right, yeah. Right.
Yay.
But on the other hand, I think this is an opportunity for developers to educate themselves, work real hard to build animations that don't break if the animation doesn't run. For instance, if animations aren't running, just call an on-cancel event, or just reduce all of them to zero duration in Fire. There are plenty of options, but we're going to have to move forward and find them all as a community.
All right, cool. So maybe we can morph this to a little bit of community stuff, because not only is your book called Animation at Work, but you have a Slack group called Animation at Work that's public, right? So that there's a particular URL people can hit and just opt in to joining it.
Slack.animationatwork.com.
And how many people are in there? Hundreds?
Thousands, actually. But, you know, active users are always less than the signed up users. I think we have 3,000 people as members, and very, very active community. Wonderful people. It's that URL again is slack.animationatwork.com. You can sign up and join. It's such a great place. We've got people representing from the various animation libraries, like Green Sock on there. Sarah Drasner drops in from time to time. CSS Tricks' very own. And it's a fun place where people can meet kind of like their heroes, sort of like I did back at that first CSS DevConf. But also, there are a lot of people who are just getting started. In fact, it's a funny story how this Slack came about. So I started getting really into CSS animations, and I'd always have all these tabs open because I'm one of those people that has like 200 tabs open at any given time, and it's just eating up my CPU, right? So I figured, okay, if you haven't read them all at the end of the week, Rachel, you still got to close them, but you can put them into a newsletter. And if people want to sign up for that newsletter, they can see your tabs. So I started doing that. And Web Animation Weekly, webanimationweekly.com, was born from that. And it's been really successful. We have over 7,000 subscribers, and I clean that list very regularly. So, you know, it's just being sent out to people who are opening it and really enjoying and clicking on the content. We try not to get in your hair too much. We don't want to be rude. And a lot of those people, they would message me and want to talk with me about, like, oh, I saw this library looks so great. I want to talk to you more about that. And I was engaging with the W3C on the Web Animations API. And finally, I was like, you know, this is a bottleneck. Y'all need to talk to y'all. Why don't we have a little Slack and everyone can come in here and have these conversations together? Because I don't know much about this request animation frame stuff, but this guy over here does. And, you know, this gal over here is doing this cool coding challenge and you should collaborate with her. So the Slack came about a year later to help organize all the people who were enjoying the organized tabs. And since then, it's really taken off. Just this, like a month ago, my features editor and I put together a little survey to send out and be like, hey, how do you want to grow the community? We're thinking about setting up a couple of new things, bringing the Slack channel and the newsletter together and make it more of a community publication instead of just my tabs. And the feedback was so overwhelmingly positive. Just having... It's amazing. People like come onto the Slack to ask people, you know, animations experts questions, these tricky questions that they might feel too embarrassed to ask their coworkers about, or they go give direct feedback to people who work for the W3C.
And that's exactly what you wanted,
awesome.
Right?
Yeah.
Because I feel like that could be a pretty good Slack billboard, is y'all need to talk to y'all. That's good. I like that. That was really well done slogan.
Yeah, but
and
it's
so
amazing how they
you don't
these
have a metric
grow.
Of success for this, really, right? You just wanted community to happen. You're not trying to. I mean, you have a book, but it's not like this Slack exists because you're trying to sell people a book, right?
No.
Like, what is it that you just wanted to talk? Well, and you made it happen.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I did the same thing back when I was making comics for a living. I started a little comic book community where we all get together and talk about making comics for girls. And I realize now, looking back, that I did the exact same thing with animation on the web. It's like, wow, I like this thing. I'm lonely. Let's all be friends.
Mm-hmm. Well, we had a question a week or two ago about that, about, like, you know, what if Twitter isn't feeling very homey anymore? Where do I, what's up? Well, how can I be a part of a community? And some of our advice was probably weak, but I think part of it was maybe you should start your own kind of thing. And Slack facilitates that pretty well, huh?
I think so. I mean, it's interesting because I've been watching how CSS Tricks has grown over the years too. And you have kind of a similar story, don't you, Chris?
Well, we don't have a Slack, really. We don't have a, like, I guess my version of that story in the way many early years ago was, yes, I got an awful lot of emails about CSS. And, you know, in a selfish way, can we harness the SEO of these people asking questions, you know, and turn it into forums? So those forums still exist today on CSS Tricks. Although I just, you know, every year I'm like, God, what are we going to do about those forums? Sometimes I slap a coat of paint on the look and feel of them. But ultimately, it's just, I feel like, I don't know, I hate to crap on forums, but they're not what they used to be. You know, people are a little more into the real-timeness of something like a Slack group than they are like, I just want to post a thread and just hope somebody responds to it.
True.
They don't feel the same as they did.
But they're
back
more
in
findable.
The day, so they are, and they all have URLs, mm-hmm. And I like that aspect to it. So I'm not, you know, they're just, they are what they are, I guess. I don't know what to say about that. I don't have any prepared thoughts on my forums, but it's similar in that I was hoping that people would talk to each other and positive stuff would come out of it. But I always like to mix that business message in there with people, and that I do tend to think in that way. I try to be entrepreneurial. I try to think, oh, wow, look at all these questions. That's good. That's good Google fodder.
And it's done very well for you. I wish I had that entrepreneurial spirit. I think I'm far too, I don't know, I was raised by a reformed hippie. So I'm very like, let's just all be friends. We don't have to worry about capitalism. I don't need to eat. Not really. And then I wake up the next morning. It's like, oh, I need a real job. So... But it's good. The community organizes itself, and I'm just so proud of how far web animation has come in the past 5 years. And you've got so many great people really pushing the state of the art forward, and it's a thing now. And that's what I always wanted. So I'm so happy.
Yeah, I mean, I guess last time you were on, we talked about the Web Animation API,
which,
if anything, is bigger and better than it was before. That would be interesting to talk about a little bit. I think Dave's question was, is it ready for prime time? So we could go there. But I'm also curious as to, like, why don't I read more about it? Is it underserved, do you think? Or am I just in the wrong circles or what?
You know, I have asked the same thing. I've been working with this API for years, and I want to see it do better. Part of the issue is that it's supported very well in Chrome and Firefox, but it's not supported at all in Internet Explorer or Edge. Now, how do I put this? There is a polyfill out there that you can use that, you know, polyfills so that the animations work using request animation frame, etc., on browsers that don't support the Web Animations API. But between you and me, I'm not too impressed with it. It's a little buggy. I had trouble making demos with it earlier on in the Web Animation API demo creation fest that I did with Mozilla. If you're interested in seeing any of these demos or the docs that I wrote with Mozilla, you can go to rachelneighbors.com/WAAPI and you can read
maybe
and find the links
high level
there.
Quick too. You could go back and listen to that episode. But the idea is that it's kind of looks to my old school eyes, I'm like, oh yeah, that's the kind of thing we were able to do with jQuery. You use the animate function and you pass it this object full of crap that you want it to do in a duration, and it will do the stuff over the time. So it's kind of like jQuery animations without jQuery. I know there's much more now and it's changing and better.
Actually, it's still the same. I mean, it's essentially the API hasn't changed, you know, get element dot animate. Here's the keyframes and here's the timing object. Boom, go for it. And it's a great API because it really opens up like the way browsers could work with this in the future. Like you could add in perhaps one day in the future a scroll-based timeline. So you could tie all the animations to scrolling. But the development on this API moves very slowly. Like we're just getting very bare bones basic features. And the number one questions people have are, hey, I would like sequencing. I would like grouping. You know, the things back from the ActionScript and Flash days. And those aren't a part of level one. They're a part of level two. And we're not even done with getting level one implemented across the board yet.
All these stories are always multi-chunked. There's the standards need to be good. Then the web browser people need to actually care and implement the standard.
Uh-huh.
And then there's authors that need to care about it and actually use it. And they're all very different groups of people.
They sure are.
And sometimes there's different people to just, and with a light touch here, to blame. But it sounds like the spec's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's in two big browsers, so that's pretty good.
Yeah.
So there's really no one to blame here other than, it's hard to blame the users when it's not an Edge. So like that's a big slice to just not be in.
Well, there's two other things here. You got to remember that this is a huge API and it's very densely written. It's hard to talk about change over time without having really dense content. And about 2 years ago, I worked with Mozilla to do all the documentation for the API on MDN. Prior to doing this documentation, the documentation was there, but it wasn't really something you could jump in feet first on and become a Web Animations API master with. You still had to dig around a lot in the spec to fully grok it, etc. So I came in, did a bunch of demos, filled out all of the docs for all of the different properties, etc. It was a great adventure. I had so much fun. And I have to say, since the documentation went up on MDN, we're starting to see a lot more libraries coming out from the community using the Web Animations API. For instance, that grouping and sequencing stuff I told you about that everyone's been asking for, there's a library for
that. Polyfillable, essentially. There's people like, oh, I can use this as a base to write my library on top of it.
Exactly. Yeah, like check out Just Animate, by the way. It's a pretty good JavaScript API. A JavaScript library that does essentially just piggyback on the Web Animations API and polyfill, that sort of thing. It's awesome. So yeah, chainable sequencing. Yes, full timeline control. It does so many great things, and it's such a performant API that you get benefits from doing these kinds of scrubbing things that are harder to achieve with request animation frame, because the API is declarative, which gives you a performance boost because the computer already knows every single beginning, middle, and end frame of this animation. You're just telling it which one to show. It's a little harder to do that with request animation frame, where it's calculating where something should be on every paint. So jumping ahead means running a bunch of calculations to see where you're supposed to be at that point in time. Anyway, that is just a tiny little sample of the sorts of performance boosts you can get from using this API. But the most, so people these days are like, Rachel, I want to use the API, but I'm concerned about all this implementation across browsers. What should I do? Should I use the polyfill? Should I not use the API? Go use a JavaScript library? I actually recommend these days use the API. Just make sure that if people aren't supporting the API in their browser, just don't show them animations. Have a fallback that doesn't use animation at all. The reason being, if your browser doesn't support the Web Animations API, it probably isn't going to do a great job with animations, period. Because to implement the Web Animations API requires lots of updates to the browser's rendering pipeline. So when the browser is ready for that kind of heavy-duty animation, it will support the API. And if people are on really low-end devices with old browsers that don't support that API, why would you subject them to animations? Just give them a non-animated experience.
It's interesting you say, like, give them a non-animated experience, and not to, like, throw certain browsers or past employers under the bus, but, like, they're in Edge, when you, like, try to do, like, SVG animation, you know, like, Edge just is like, how about I show nothing instead?
Oh my.
And wow. You're just like, dang, like, buddy, like, you could have just been static, but instead you've, like, decided to show nothing. And so it's like, it's tough. And then you're like, okay, well, now I need a library. Okay, and then, like, maybe I could do, like, at supports and some kind of import. But then that user has to wait a long time. And you're just like, I don't know. For me, it's just like, I want to use this stuff, but I also, like don't want to maintain a logic tree for how to, like...
This is how we got jQuery,
wasn't
it? Make
a button shimmer. Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I'm still surprised by that myself as well. You know, there's some of the most passionate people working in the SVG space work for Edge, actually. Bogdan Brinza, he's, I think, the chair of the SVG working group. And it's just browsers move slowly sometimes on implementing these features. But it's still surprising because SVG was a thing and has been a thing for a long time. Like, flat design took off, SVG was there, and it's been there, and it's been a big deal for a long time. And I feel some days the same way with animation. I wake up and it's like, is it a thing yet? Is it a thing everywhere? And sometimes these things just take a while.
Do you think it's like because the desires are like, I want Flash in the browser almost, you know, like where I can like scrub a timeline and like, you know, build out keyframes and then I hit play and then it animates? Or like, do you think like the expectation is so far out? Like, I want all these things, and then browsers are like, we can do all those things. It's just going to take years. Or I guess what's the holdup?
Good question. I don't know. Part of it is that we're waiting on three or more software companies to implement features altogether. So it's sort of a three-legged race in that regard. Well, I guess almost literally. With Flash, we just had to wait for Adobe to say, okay, you got a feature, enjoy. But now we have to wait for three Adobes to say, okay, we all agreed this feature would be like this and you can enjoy it. And you can only imagine how much coordination and time that takes. It's interesting to see concepts like CSS Houdini coming out where, I mean, that's really been pushed forward by Tab Atkins over at Chrome, I forget if technically he's at Chrome or Google, but either way, he's at the W3C CSS working group. He's been pushing hard on this thing called CSS Houdini, which essentially would allow people to create their own sort of on-the-fly CSS specs. And it's interesting because it really democratizes feature development to the individual's level. And I'm fascinated to see where that's going to go. It might solve some of these very problems that we're talking about here.
That's certainly a huge story. And it's such a complicated, tricky one. But yeah, I like that people are putting their finger on that idea. That's Houdini can do this stuff, but what's most interesting about Houdini is how it shifts the trying of new features and stuff to a different like type of person.
Well, I mean, it could mean a resurgence of that script kiddie day back when, you know, you used to go on DHTML and I forget what that site was, and you copy pasta some stuff in to get a cool effect with JavaScript. We might see that happen with CSS. Or the other fear is that the ball could swing too far in the direction of developers, and, you know, designers would be completely left out of the equation because it would require having a computer science degree to contribute meaningfully to building interaction design and CSS out together. So,
interesting story to follow.
Yeah, it's an interesting future we got ahead of us here. I'm excited to see where it goes.
This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you by Rollbar, longtime wonderful sponsor of Shop Talk Show. Rollbar.com/Shop Talk Show, which is how you get the free Bootstrap plan on them. Very generous and very cool. It's about tracking errors in your web application. If you find that some action or URL or something on your app is triggering like a page ruining 500 error or something, you shouldn't be waiting for an email about that to find out. That's on you. You need to be figuring that out. You shouldn't be looking through logs and crap. You instantly know what's broken and why with Rollbar. So there's some extra cool features in Rollbar that you should know about. One of them is source maps. So if you ship source maps with your code to your apps, which is usually just like part of a build process, not that hard of a thing to do, Rollbar supports using those source maps to get meaningful stack traces while still using like minified code for your actual like production JavaScript, which is great. And the telemetry feature. So JavaScript telemetry gives a timeline of browser events leading up to an error. It's like a black box recorder, like in airplanes, but for when your web app crashes. So you just have lots of context. You know exactly what went wrong when something goes wrong. That's incredibly vital for any web app. You can integrate it into your workflow really easily. You can have errors sent to Slack or HipChat or Jira or whatever. Integrating into your app is just a few lines of code. It's just a miracle product. Check it out, rollbar.com/shoptalkshow.
I was the other day, you know, Grid is out. Grid is Woo-hoo. Very popular right now. And people are building out kind of old posters or like old typographical samples, kind of using CSS Grid. But the big difference between like these, like, you know, digital interpretations of this like old poster or something is that the poster looks old. And I just was like, oh, maybe could I write like a Houdini to just make a website look old, just feel crappy, like feel grungy? And could we program a browser to like not render so clearly?
Oh, I don't know. This again, not my idea. I can't remember, but it's one of those ideas that stuck in my head forever, is that like the publication date of an article should influence how modern the site feels, and that like after it's like 6 years old, the letters should just be hanging from threads. They should look all like the sun has been beating down on them for, you know.
Actually, I really like that idea, Chris. You're right. There's a lot of context lost when people look at a website without looking at the publication date first. It would be interesting to be able to infer that.
You know, I'm like poking around in Figma right now, which is because I always have like a new version of CSS Tricks in the works. I like this design idea. I'm going to steal this. And then it takes me, you know, 5 months to get something really good. And then I build it quick, you know.
Oh, you're doing better than I am.
I'll put together an article design and I'll be like, this looks like a good looking article design to my eyes. Like now I'm finally ready to build this idea out. But that same template, I don't have a sense of nuanced different templates on CSS Tricks. And probably I should, and maybe I should store that idea around too. But now all of a sudden articles from 2008 are going to be in this layout and look exactly like an article layout from that I'm going to publish in 2019. You know, they're going to be identical looking. It's not like I'm advocating, use crappier colors and bad typography for those old articles, but it does seem to be like, I don't know what to think about that.
Body class 2008, font family lobster. Done.
Oh my God, you remember that font too? Oh my goodness.
You should do it, Chris. So bringing it back to animation, I have more questions. Kind of before the show, we were just, you know, kind of chatting like who's like doing animation well and stuff like that. And you're like, well, there's plenty of people or plenty of like shops kind of doing that. But you kind of mentioned that most of the animation stuff is kind of happening on like native apps and on that level. And I was kind of that kind of made me curious. I was kind of like, well, why do native apps have such an animation advantage compared to like web animation?
That's a great question. And there are a couple of possible answers. As always, it's one of those nebulous things. Let me throw some ideas out there. So first off, you go to codepen.com or codepen.io, as it were, or you go to the OWL Awards, AWWW Awards, and you will see beautiful instances of people doing creative, mesmerizing things with web technologies. Sometimes it's not something you'd want to see in production, like there's 1,000 divs to achieve a Starfield effect. But sometimes you wonder, why aren't people using this cool SVG morph for page transitions? And, you know, the answer might be that it requires a huge tree of logic to implement. But mostly, it's not like the power isn't there. We do have the power to make compelling, beautiful animations. But it's harder to find these animations outside showcase sites, like you'd see at awards or on or work coming out from agencies and galleries on CodePen. And there are a couple of reasons that might be. One of them might be large companies move slowly. I mean, we just talked about how hard it is to imagine software being released by three different companies at the same time, right? Well, large companies with large data, large code bases have similar shipping problems. You know, you just don't walk in and say, boom, we're going to be using really cool page transitions. And everyone's like, yay. That doesn't happen very rapidly. So you're going, you're using Amazon.com or you're visiting, you know, one of those megalith sites, even, you know, Apple or Microsoft.com. And you might see a little animation, but you're not going to see anything groundbreaking. You're not going to see anything that blows your socks off the way smaller sites.
You get a little hamburger that turns into an X.
Ooh, dang, yeah.
You seen that one?
Avant-garde. I actually got to commend the folks at Apple.com for trying to do something cool with their various releases. Like, I remember the Mac that you could scroll through and it would like show you inside it. And it was like the first scroll triggered video that we'd ever encountered on the web. And it was like, this is amazing.
Exploded the Mac as you scrolled.
Yeah, that was so cool. So I gotta commend them. Like right now, we can see some really cool things showing up, like in the UI over at Salesforce, their Lightning Design system, which is pretty kick-ass, if I do say so myself. It does a great job of incorporating animations in discrete but useful ways. Also, Stripe is a good example of a company site where you're seeing great animations being used for both delight and purposeful interactions. I think also one of the issues might be the tooling. It's right now the communication between here's a thing and here's how we could animate it. It requires like three different people involved in it. You end up with a designer doing motion comps and then all the way down to a developer implementing those motion comps. And it's a very awkward, sticky process. It kind of, honestly, watching it in process, it kind of reminds me of the days when we used to send Photoshop documents to front-end developers. It's like, measure the exact pixels, implement the exact pixel distances from everything, or else there will be problems. And you see that kind of, like, that's where we are with animation right now on the web. Whereas when you look at the app space and the tooling designed around app development, animation is built right in from the start. There are default animations you can just slap right in there, you know, a Chords Composer be like, dang, I want this to slide out. It's sliding out. Great job. This should be a gesture. It's a gesture now. We got to make an entire JavaScript library to handle gestures on the web. It's tough. And then we got to detect if people might even be able to use gestures. Are they on a large screen device?
No. It's just... If choosing a transition between two things was a drop-down menu in the apps we use to build websites, we'd probably do it a lot more often.
And to that extent, we're seeing animation being picked up by things like Webflow and Envision, the prototyping apps that people have been using, started to be using in their flows. Like the major difference between where the web is when I was like, man, CSS animations rock, I'm going to go do this for a while, 5 years ago, and where we are now is I've seen that designers have moved increasingly away from Photoshop and increasingly into prototyping frameworks like Framer and InVision and Webflow. Well, Webflow actually is full-on production queue now, too, for designers. It's pretty awesome. If you're a strict-on designer and you're interested in that, you should totally check it out, but it's interesting to see how animation has kind of gone hand in hand with the development of the prototyping space. Kind of makes you think back on Flash as a tool set that people used to use to create the web. I mean, maybe animation does require a tool set, because otherwise it takes 5 years worth of front-end development experience just to make something move across the page. That's not really scalable.
I think what people are imagining, at least what I'm imagining in my head right now and what we're all talking about, is stuff like, how does a menu open up? How does a page transition? How does a accordion open? How do you know, like the basic animations of what you think of a website is, and there probably is, you know, a dozen different just kind of basic things that are often animated almost always, in a native app. Just like I just feel like if you downloaded some new native app and it clicked around just like we're used to on websites, it would feel so terrible.
Absolutely.
On mobile that you'd just be like, no, this app is joke.
We're so seeing that, yeah. I mean,
and so, okay. But on. That's just like, I don't know, like, I don't even know what I'm trying to say. There's that type of animation, and then there's a whole divide between another whole world, which is just like, I'm animating like an ad for a car company or something. I'm using web technology to do it, but it's long form. I'm telling a story. This is an animated character. There's like those two worlds feel related and the technologies are related, but the way that we think about them is not, right? Or like, how do those things overlap?
Well, I think we're going to see them overlap more and more with progressive web apps. I mean, the idea of progressive web apps is, hey, it's a site. And now it's kind of like an app. It's at your beck and call. But it doesn't act, you know, it has to still feel like an app for it to take its rightful place next to native apps. So I think we're going to see pressure being on as people increasingly adopt the progressive web app manifesto. We're going to see the pressure be on to adopt these app-like interaction models, you know, stateful transitions, cause and effect, supplemental animations when you're popping information on and off of the... I'm totally reading out of my book right now. No, I'm kidding. But
this is chapter five, dramatic.
There are five different kinds of that. Anyway, so but the problem is that the web wasn't really built around these models. I think you can see some, like, I'm really into Vue these days because Vue for me rekindles the magic of building for the web that I had when I first came in, you know, the trifecta, HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. And Vue makes it fun again. You're not just writing in JavaScript or you're not just... you know, making a document that's static. It's an interactive model that still has its roots in the DOM, in tags, and you add like a transition tag. And it reminds me a lot of the SVG markup that was established long ago. You know, SVG animations were tags. And I love that. I love that feeling. That model doesn't really exist in the wild in the web because HTML is a document markup language. HTML documents, not HTML apps, not HTML flash sites, not HTML whiz bang banner, HTML document. And we're seeing that documents don't really encapsulate all of what people want to do with the information they interact with every day. And we're trying to adapt this document model to an interaction model. And it's a little bumpy. And we've got different approaches. You know, we got React. It's trying to make it so that you can call information on and off a page without doing a whole refresh. And you can animate information in that regard. But the web is still like hyperlinks. They're not designed for animation. They just repaint the whole page. So we have to build a JavaScript framework around this interaction to create a more app-like model. It's an interesting time for interaction development, that's for sure.
I think a lot about like video games. You know, you code a video game in JavaScript, you're either writing your own kind of animation framework to like move sprites around, or you hop into Phaser or something and you're like, okay, how does Phaser do spriting? Okay, this, you know, but the web animation API, if it, you know, comes everywhere, sort of solves that, hopefully. It's like, well, you use the web animation API to like augment sprites. You just, you know, like that cycle, you hit the right arrow and you go to the right cycle, you know, up arrow goes, you know, you think about like, I don't know, Zelda walking around or Link from Zelda walking around and it's just, you know, responding to arrow keys or gamepad inputs. And
you've totally got this, Dave.
Yeah, well, I just made a silly little game, but I was like, oh, you know, and the prototype is kind of there and like the functionality is there. But I was like, you know, this needs like something to make it interesting, like characters or something, you know, and so, you know, how to screens and things like that. And so I just, you know, immediately I start kind of going down like an animation kind of mindset. Like you said, you know, progressive web apps will probably drive some of this animation stuff just because like when you have an app, you know, you have onboarding, you have, which kind of ideally uses some animation to kind of show how things work or how things get tapped or, you know, but with like these games I'm kind of making in JavaScript, you know, now I need like an animation sort of situation to kind of explain the game and give it character and all that. And this is the web animation API would be great for
it. You should totally be using it. I mean, like it's supported so in so many places, and where it's not supported, like, you know, give people jump cuts.
Well, I use Edge. So anyway,
that's true. Edge is like the big supporter of progressive web apps right now, which is totally awesome. But at the same time, like when that day comes and Edge has totally adopted the web animations API, don't you want your app to shine on that day after that system update?
That's true. It'll be great on Windows Insider Build 18.243. It's going to be just a miracle.
Nice.
I have one more-ish question.
Bring it.
I guess I don't know how we're doing on time, but one thing Val Head recently posted, it was on 24 Ways this year, but an article called Stop Leaving Animation to the Last Minute.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty good article. It's just Val obviously is a crusader for animation and doing it well. But I guess from your point of view, what does that mean for web developers? And the way I put it is like, where should I...
To extend the question, I could say that at CodePen, we use animation for a variety of simple things like hiding and revealing and that type of thing. But it feels like we are could be considered called out on something like this. It's not part of our style guide. When we add an animation, we just be like, yeah, that looks about right. You know, like, and I feel like a lot of people are in that boat, but isn't that exactly what she means? That we left it for the last minute.
Well, yes. I actually originally, when I came into the animation space, I was very much, you got to think about it early. You got to think about it often. But as I've been in this space longer and longer, I realize that a lot of companies do not have that luxury. Like, we would love to think about the content strategy and the UX and the animation and the design and the colors and the branding, and everything has to be thought of first before we write one stripe of code. And then, you know, you read these books like, you know, The $100 Startup, and it's like, why would you waste all your time planning the perfect thing when you can just launch something and see if it's good enough? And I got to say, most of us fall somewhere on that spectrum. spectrum of perfectly plotted and moving forward, and we have all the meetings in the beginning and everyone's on board and we're designing with all these great things in mind and we make something great. And, oh my God, I just need to make this. It's not perfect, but making something is better than nothing. And you also end up with these large companies, like I talked about, lots of large companies take a long time to move, where they can't just backpedal all of the work that they've done throughout their system and rethink everything from the ground up with animation in mind. Sometimes they have to progressively enhance what they already have with animation later. And there's actually nothing wrong with that, so long as you're thinking about it carefully and not adding animation superfluously. Like if you try to look for those places where there are good, easy wins, like, you know, page transitions, that's a super easy win. But most importantly, human interactions, like when a person clicks on something, adding an animation to that to indicate cause and effect. Those are good places where you can update the interaction model for your site, make it feel more modern, make it feel nicer for users. You can start adding it into your style guides. We don't always get to think about these things up front. Sometimes we think about them a little after the fact. But in general, if you have a company that has an entire, like, say, prototyping department, the earlier they can think about animations, the better the end product is going to be, because it is harder to add animations after the fact than it is to think about them out the gate. It can impact what kind of framework you're going to use or what sorts of models you're going to adopt. For instance, if I were thinking animations first, I'd probably go for something like Vue.js as my initial prototyping option, because it works so well with them.
I think I was dreaming a little bit about having a prototyping department.
Oh my God, I wish I had a prototyping department for my website and all of the crackpot ideas I've ever had.
Hey, y'all know Dave Rupert LLC is available to
hire. Hey.
I hate to open a can of worms right at the last second, but there's one that just comes into my mind as like a front-end developer the last decade or so. What, over that time, there's always been some library that comes up and down in terms of excitement. Like there's like, oh, here's a new animation library. Oh my God, yeah. So cool. Look at all these demos. Oh my God. And then it fades out because of who knows what reasons. You know, it's not maintained or the world just moved on from that technology or whatever. And there's just been a roller coaster of it, except what seems like to me, and this isn't an ad for them, but I do like them. The people like GreenSock, it's a GreenSock is just this like train that just like maintains, like that's the lib of choice. And like, does that seem that way to you, or like, what's up with that? And also that it also the people are always like, I don't know, like the license weirds me out. I know they would have something to say about that, or that the weight of it is an awful lot, and it seems to be more oriented at like big, large scale things. When really, what I want is like a really nice way to open a drop down menu. So what's up with that?
Oh, good question. So GreenSock is one of those golden products of the history of the web that we can never forget about. GreenSock started as an ActionScript library for Flash. It was a tweening library. And ActionScript, by the way, being a sister language of JavaScript, they're both children of ECMAScript. You know ECMAScript, right? We keep talking about it, ECMAScript 6, etc. So anyway, ActionScript is a lot like JavaScript. And when Flash's numbers were up on the wall, GreenSock developers, we were like, ooh, the days of Flash, they're numbered. We should take this to the web, and rewrote the entire thing in JavaScript. It still exists as a tweening library for Flash as well, but it's also in JavaScript for the web. It runs on Request Animation Frame. And yeah, it is a little big because it does such a good job of normalizing behaviors, specifically SVG animation behaviors across various browsers, which is really, 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 really valuable right now. Because didn't I just hear you lamenting that there's all this stuff you'd love to do with SVG, but darn it, browsers, all of them, not just one of them, have slightly different implementations that can make that tough. So what do you do there? Well, back in the days of jQuery, we know what happened when browsers had slightly different implementations of specifications. jQuery emerged to handle that and normalize behavior. GreenSock's done the same for SVG animation, which is partly one of the reasons why it's managed to really hang on and be so influential and robust and relevant in the community to this day. You know, we don't talk about a lot of things that survived the Flash era, but GreenSock came out with flying colors because it does all these great things for developers and designers. but it does have some drawbacks. There's the size issue. There's the fact that request animation frame animations, currently, to my knowledge, no browser can look at the animations that GreenSock runs, where it's basically punching CSS values over and over into the DOM and see that as animation. It just sees that as an update to the DOM, and it repaints. So they don't send those to, engines don't send those to the GPU or optimize them in any way. Although the GreenSock team has done a wonderful job of making sure that for what GreenSock does, it is running as quickly as possible. But if we see things like VR and AR emerging, will that model still work? Well, we'll find out. In that case, something like the Web Animations API, which is so integrated with the browser's rendering pipeline, might become more relevant. But I say today, GreenSock is really, really good if you're trying to do lots of things with SVGs, or you want something that's really accessible for a lot of people to come on and know. It's kind of like the, I think of it as like the jQuery of animation. It's good to know. You're going to use it if you work on anything that involves any sort of interactivity in your career. But you also want to keep an eye on the Web Animations API, or in this case, JavaScript, vanilla JavaScript back in the jQuery day, because there's a good chance that in the future, what GreenSock does today will be supported across browsers and normalized, and that need won't be there anymore, not in the way it is today. GreenSock will always be the tool of choice for interaction developers simply because people at GreenSock care about it so much, and they have this huge knowledge from the Flash days onward that can't be beaten. But for working on something like Salesforce or a big interface for a large site, you might not find you need quite such a library one day in the future.
I always thought about, like, it's abstracted anyway. So, like, what they need to continue to support is the syntax that they invented to work. Mm-hmm. What happens behind the scenes can change. So, like, there may be a future in which that they abstract their syntax in to utilize something like Web Animations API. I don't know enough about the internals to know if that's possible. It seems possible.
Well, they did publish a post about why they're not supporting the Web Animations API. So if you want to know why they haven't
done it
yet, well, you know, give it 5 years. Things change.
Time to start my Whoppy Socks animation library. Hey! All right, we should wrap it up. Rachel, thank you so much for coming on the show. But for people who are not following you and giving you money, how can they do that?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at Rachel Neighbors, all one word. By the way, that last name is N-A-B-O-R-S, like Jim Neighbors, if you remember him from the Andy Griffith Show. But if you would like to learn CSS animations or learn a little bit more about how to build better communications through cartooning, I've got some courses up on my site, courses.rachelneighbors.com. And if you use that same coupon code, SHOPTALK, you'll get 20% off there as well. And thank you. It's been awesome.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. And thank you, dear listener, for downloading this in your podcatcher choice. Be sure to star, heart, favorite it up. That's how people find out about the show. We really, really, really appreciate those reviews.
I see Apple's got podcast analytics now.
Yeah.
Just logged in there. And so we'll be able to see you now.
Yeah, we'll see your likes and reviews. So thank you. If you we're on Spotify now, too, so you can catch us there. If you want to, you can follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show for tens of tweets a month. And if you hate your job, head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs and get a brand new one, because people want to hire people like you.
Hey, Shop Talk Show listeners, we have a really cool job opportunity to let you know about. This is in Vancouver, British Columbia, in Canada, at a place called We the Collective. It's a digital agency, and one of the things they do is build some of the best websites for the gaming industry. Like, how fun would that be? So cool. They're looking for you, essentially, the type of people that listen to Shop Talk Show. They need somebody with some experience delivering web products within a digital agency, but HTML, modular CSS, JavaScript, SAS, you know, the stuff that you work in every day, Gulp and NPM and version control. All the tools that are what front-end development is today, that's who they're looking for. Go work at We the Collective. At least check them out. Just their website is wonderful. I'm sure it's an amazing team to work for. The URL for the job specifically will be in the show notes here for this episode of Shop Talk Show. That's the job at the front-end developer position at We the Collective. And in just their URL, if you just want to check them out, is wethecollective.com. Very cool. Check them out. Go work for We the Collective.
And Chris, do you have anything else?
Shop.show.com.